This is a Triple J podcast.
Hack. Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is the Hack Podcast. Nothing more annoying, I reckon it's fair to say, than opening a packet of something from the shops and thinking, it's half empty. There's not as much in here as there used to be. Are quantities shrinking? Are we going crazy or are we being ripped off? Is the size going down while prices are shooting up? Later in this podcast, we're going to be diving into the new research that some Australian researchers have done on shrinkflation, a thing that they say is happening here. It's fascinating because it's actually harder to prove than you would think, so we'll explain why. Later, we're going to be checking in with the Oscars. There's been a whole lot of razzle-dazzle. We'll tell you what's been going on there. First, though.
Hack. The system needs to work better than it is at the moment.
On Triple J.
If you're in southeastern Australia, you're probably a bit hot because a heatwave's been hitting South Australia, Tassie, Victoria, and it's so bad that a festival in Victoria Pitch, which was already underway, had to be cancelled because of the fire danger over the weekend. A 23-year-old died at the festival. And there are now questions about why the event wasn't cancelled earlier, a lack of phone reception at the site, and more broadly, what the future is for big festivals during the warmer months and during weather emergencies. If you were at Pitch, how was it there? How did you find the process, getting out? Did you feel like there was a lot of communication? Hit us up, 0439 757 555. First though, here's reporter Angus McIntosh with an update.
Saturday night into Sunday will be quite oppressive and quite hot.
At the end of last week, with Victorians getting ready for a long weekend, Jason Heffernan from the Country Fire Authority was having to be the bearer of bad news.
And we're not going to see any reprieve of these really high temperatures in Victoria until that Tuesday morning.
Temperatures were forecast to soar into the high 30s and low 40s, and the risk of bushfires was a real concern, especially after a dry February.
And that is why we're starting to see some real elevated and extreme fire dangers.
It's not what a lot of people wanted to hear. Parts of Melbourne's Moomba Festival were cancelled, and there were worries about three other festivals scheduled in regional Victoria over the weekend: Pitch, Golden Plains, and Esoteric. Pitch, held at a site between the Grampians and Ararat, was going ahead in an area with an extreme fire danger warning. And a lot of people hoping to go were super confused about what to do.
I think just someone to be like, don't come or come. Like, the middle ground is really, really confusing.
Going home, it's too hot, can't hack the heat.
I don't know, it just seems like a bit of a mess around for the people that want to go.
On Saturday, Pitch Festival organisers told ticket holders who hadn't yet arrived to delay coming to the festival until further notice. They also said the safest thing for people who were already there was to leave. But they stopped short of actually cancelling the event.
They're telling people to come, but don't come until later in the day. But also, the people there, you need to leave. What do you want us to do? If you're not going to issue refunds, what do you want us to do?
Then yesterday, things took a tragic turn. A 23-year-old man was taken to hospital from the festival and later died. Another two men also went to hospital, and Ambulance Victoria says the three incidents involved suspected substance use. Later yesterday, the four-day festival was cancelled altogether after authorities updated the extreme fire danger warning and people were encouraged to leave when they were sober and rested.
The issue I have is this event should never have gone ahead.
People have been pretty angry about how things went down, including, of course, parents like Tanya, who lost contact with her youngest son at one point, with crappy phone service also adding to her stress.
It's not about how well it's run. We knew that the weather conditions were going to be like this.
But some are saying the backlash is an overreaction. Like Brendan, he's a worker at the festival.
There's an army of fire, first aid, police, safety officers.
Pitch Festival said in a statement yesterday that ticket holders would receive an update about refunds, but its priority right now was getting people home safely. And one of Victoria's fire agencies says Pitch organisers did act appropriately. Here's Forest Fire Management Victoria's Chief Fire Officer, Chris Hardman.
They did exactly what the right thing was. You know, people love to be out enjoying this time of year. Unfortunately, Mother Nature can change things for us.
And what about those other festivals in Western Victoria? Well, Golden Plains near Meredith went ahead as planned. It wrapped up this morning, and Esoteric Festival near Donald, about 120 kilometres north of Pitch, also went ahead. The fire danger at that site was classified as extreme.
trying to just keep, you know, stay hydrated. As you see, a lot of bags of ice, and try and keep in the shape. That's all we can do. I think it's everyone's concerned a bit, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, you got to look after yourself, and hopefully people do that.
And trying to keep people safe was Alexandre's job. He's from the harm reduction organisation, DanceWise.
It's just in these hot, humid conditions with lots of people in lots of crowded places, there are increased risks.
He says heat adds a whole extra layer of risk for people taking drugs or drinking.
It's a myth that drug users don't care about their health. They are actively engaged and wanting to take the best advice.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Angus McIntosh reporting there, production support from Angel Parsons. Want to explore this a bit more now, what this is going to mean going forward. Like these big events in regional areas in the warmer months, how's that going to work? Dr. Milad Haghani researches crowd and public safety. He's from UNSW and he's been looking into this and he's with us now. G'day Milad, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've seen a few cancellations because of heat over the past few days. You just heard a bit about some of those. You've been doing the research into it, though. Has it been happening more often in recent years?
Absolutely. I have looked into the news coverage of the events that have got cancelled or disrupted due to extreme weather conditions over the last few years. And with a quick search, you can find at least 25 cases during 2020. Two and 2023 only in Australia, and about the same number and even more in the US. So it is evident that extreme weather conditions, likely attributable to climate change effects, are actually testing the viability of music festivals, especially those that are held in regional areas that are popular locations for having multiple day festivals. And when you combine this with the fact that also some festivals are struggling with cost of living situation and the economic cost of the supply chain and the increased insurance premiums, it's creating a compound risk essentially for the event industry.
Were you surprised that Pitch had to be cancelled, Milad? I mean, as someone who looks at, you know, maybe weather conditions, the big events that are happening, did you expect that something like this would happen?
I was not too surprised, mainly because of the fact that it happened little by little. It was very clear that there was a struggle keeping the schedule of the event, given the fact that many people were already on site and many people had already planned transport to the site. There is always a balance. When you cancel an event like this, there is always disappointment on the part of the patrons. The thing is that when you cancel an event, we do not know how many health situations we have prevented by canceling the event. We don't know how much risk people would have faced if they had attended the event, so people are left with the feeling of disappointment.
From a public safety point of view, is it also just not safe to have these events in places without mobile phone reception, surrounded by bush? Should these big events be held in a place where there's not a lot of communication?
It does certainly add extra elements of risk. The fact that these areas are more prone to the effects of severe weather, whether it's flooding, whether it's bushfire, and as you rightly mentioned, the fact that there is little phone coverage usually, that adds further layers of complexity to the health and safety. The presence of, for example, emergency services, but we have to also bear in mind that these festivals have great positive impact for regional Australia and regional areas. Essentially, they bring cultural tourism. It's a big industry, more than 10 million people attend in Australia every year, generates approximately $1 billion in ticket sales. And that generates a lot of economic activity. More than 41,000 people are employed directly and indirectly in this sector. So it will have some impact on regional employment, et cetera, if the decision is to move away from having festivals in those areas, essentially.
Is there enough warning for these events to be called off earlier? Is there enough information available early enough for the call to be made a week or 2 weeks out?
It would be really hard because our weather forecast cannot be that accurate. And also for having a festival of this scale, you need to have things in place a long time in advance, and having to call them off in a short notice is not necessarily something that is easy on the part of the organizers. I am 100% confident that They do try to get the best information available in terms of the weather forecast when they schedule these events, but there is so much you can do essentially to predict these kind of weather conditions too far in advance when you're scheduling an event.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with public safety expert Milad Haghani about big events during heat waves on the back of Pitch Festival in Victoria being cancelled over the weekend. Milad, what about safety briefings before events? Is that something that should be happening more? I'm just wondering what your advice would be to make these events safer.
One of the issues is that we need to bring people more to the forefront of these risk assessments and keep them as stakeholders in our risk assessments, keep them more informed, and keep safety essentially a shared responsibility. It's very important that we build a culture around this, given the fact that it's a complex issue. People need to be aware of the risks that are involved in attending these kind of festivals in order for them to be able to conduct an individualized risk assessment. Essentially, when we give advice to people, one advice might not work essentially for everybody. It is important that we put enough information out there so that individuals can make their own informed decisions.
And do you think, Milad, feasibly in the decades ahead, we will be able to safely hold these big events during summer?
It's really hard. There is scientific evidence that Australia is going to having a disproportionate share of the climate change impacts, and all forms of severe weather conditions are going to increase essentially in Australia. You might expect that as this happens, the frequency of the clashes with these kind of festivals are going to also increase. But something I think that festival goers and organizers and the event industry in general can do is bear in mind that the event industry is itself a major contributor of carbon emission. It is in their best interest, the event industry. They also reduce their level of carbon emission and carbon footprint, and also they encourage attendees to take sustainability measures and engage in the type of behavior that reduces the carbon footprint of these events, considering the fact that the very existence of these events is kind of being threatened by climatic impacts.
We appreciate your take on all of this. Dr. Milad Haghani, crowd and public safety expert from UNSW, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And some messages on the text line. Someone says, what about holding these regional festivals in the cooler months? Might that be the answer? Someone else, Aaron from Castle Hill, says Laneway moved from the University of Sydney to undercover at Olympic Park, and it's now actually enjoyable instead of being exhausted from the heat. Festivals really need to move away from the warmer months. Yeah, interesting. When I went to Laneway a couple of years ago and it was held at the new site, I thought it would be a lot different, maybe a lot warmer than it was, but it was actually a lot more comfortable. And Pepita from WA says they should have cancelled to save those who are coming from interstate the cost. Also, pill testing should be freely available. Governments need to get with the science and implement harm reduction strategies rather than taking old-fashioned, unproven and ineffective drug policy of just saying no. That's Pepita's opinion there.
Hack. It's not a solution to the cost of living crisis, cereal for dinner.
On Triple J.
Are you one of those people that's convinced that you're getting less and less at the shops? Not only that the prices are going up and you're struggling with that, but the quantities are going down. Things are getting smaller. Well, it's called shrinkflation. You might have heard of that. There's a lot of content about it on TikTok, on Instagram. When a product gets smaller, but the price stays the same or it increases. It seems like it'd be a pretty straightforward thing to spot. But as Shalila Medora finds out, proving shrinkflation exists is harder than it sounds, and harder than saying it too.
How are you dealing with it? Shrinkflation, it's all anybody's talking about.
There's nothing worse than feeling ripped off.
Cadbury chocolate pudding now bigger on their packaging, but it's actually the same exact size.
Doritos used to come in 9.75 ounce bags, but now they're packaged in 9.25 ounce bags, which is 11 less chips per bag.
Redhead matchboxes used to have 60 little bits of wood in them, and now there's only 45.
We've definitely seen an increase in tip-offs to us about shrinkflation starting sort of about two or three years ago.
Liam Kennedy from Consumer Group Choice says customers started complaining about shrinkflation, or when products get smaller but prices remain the same, or increase around the time inflation went up. But it's actually harder to prove than you think.
Really, this happens quietly, and shoppers don't really notice until they realise that their favourite products at some point previously have gotten smaller.
A Deakin University research team decided to do a deep dive on one of the repeat offenders, cereal. Here's Dr. Christina Zorbas.
7 cereal products have decreased in size whilst increasing in price.
Dr. Zorbas says across the board, cereal prices have spiked by 40%.
So that might be a couple of dollars, but then when you see a cereal costing $10 on the shelf, you know that's quite an increase for families and consumers at home.
Why focus on cereal, you ask? Well, partly because of this.
The price of a bowl of cereal with milk and with fruit is less than a dollar. So you can imagine why a consumer under pressure might find that to be a good place to go.
Last month, the head of cereal giant Kellogg's, Gary Pilnick, said people struggling with cost of living should just eat cereal for dinner.
Cereal for dinner is something that is probably more on trend now, and we would expect to continue as that consumer is under pressure.
Mr. Pilnick earns a baseline salary of $1.5 million a year and got more than $6 million in bonuses last year alone. So yeah, the backlash was swift and harsh.
The food industry is just so out of touch with how consumers are getting by at the moment. People are eating it because they have to, not because they're in a position to make the best nutritional choice.
Liam Kennedy from Choice says there isn't a whole lot consumers can do about shrinkflation, except keep an eye on it. He says consumers should be aware of changes in unit price and packaging updates.
We've often seen shrinkflation be accompanied by these sort of slight changes in the branding of the product and what they say is in it.
Speaking of cost of living, the federal government today announced it would scrap a tax on 500 imported goods, saying these will end up costing less for consumers in the long run. Random things like menstrual products, fridges and dodgem cars. Here's the ABC's business reporter, Peter Ryan.
Then you have things like chopsticks, fishing reels, ballpoint pens, toasters, X-ray film, electric blankets, all nuisance imports, but the revenue isn't worth the trouble of collecting it.
The change is part of the federal government's focus on cost of living ahead of the May budget.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Majora with that update. A lot of messages coming through on this one. Someone says digestive biscuits have shortened their number of biscuits per packet. Another person talking about spreads, you know, that you put on your toast in jars. Someone saying they did say 400 gram on the jars. Now they say 380. Same jars though, just change what they say on the label. Another person, Jess, 500 grams of ancient grain oats were $5. Bought it today, was the same price, only 390 grams. And Rowan from Newey says, a certain popular chocolate bar, like what you've done there, Rowan, works well for us at the ABC. Certain popular chocolate bar has gone down in size from 190 grams to 185. Now it's 180 grams. But has the price changed? No, it hasn't. Look, you're all reporting it. Is it actually a thing? Let's ask an economist. Zach Gross is a lecturer in economics at Monash Uni. He's with us now. G'day, Zach. Thanks for coming on Hack.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
We just heard a bit about shrinkflation, some new research finding examples of it, especially with cereal in Australia. Is it something you've noticed too?
Yeah, I think I have. It's something that when you look at the supermarket, maybe you don't see an increase in the listed price. But if the boxes are a little bit smaller, well, that's a de facto increase in price because you're getting less for the same price. So it's definitely happening out there, that's for sure.
Another thing that Shalala mentioned just before was the federal government announcing it's going to cut the 5% import tariff on a heap of random things, pyjamas, fridges, dodgem cars. Some of them seem maybe a bit strange, others maybe not. Is this going to work? How will it work for people? Will they notice the impact?
Absolutely. These taxes are known as nuisance tariffs, and they're pretty small, 1% here, 2% there, but they do add up. And there have been a bit of a historical legacy back in the days when we did used to have substantial tariffs and taxes on goods that came in from overseas. So there are only a few of them left, these nuisance tariffs, but getting rid of them, well, look, every cent helps. So I don't think we're going to see a revolutionary drop in the cost of living, but it will mean that things are a little bit cheaper than they otherwise otherwise would be. And, you know, when you're dealing with a high rate of inflation as we are today, every little bit helps.
Yeah, fair enough. And I mean, this is the thing that everyone is talking about, especially young Australians. It is the cost of getting by day to day, the cost of essential goods, groceries, things like that. Can you explain, Zach, what is happening with inflation right now, where we're at? Because from a personal point of view, maybe you're thinking things are just going up and up and up. I'm reading the news. It all seems pretty grim. Is that an accurate reflection, or are things actually getting better?
Look, I think that's a not unreasonable point of view. Inflation's come down. So it peaked around 8%. Now it's closer to 4%. And so it's come down a long way from where it used to be. Still too high. Still want to get it down a little bit lower. But that doesn't mean that prices are going to go back to their original level. It just means that the price increases aren't going to get any worse. So I think those days of a $3 latte, they're well and truly behind us. They might not be getting any more expensive, but they'll still remain at their current very high level. So we should expect to see inflation continue to fall, hopefully back to around 2-3% over the next year or so. But that doesn't mean things will go back to the way they were before.
That's interesting. So traditionally, is this how it's worked, that, you know, inflation figures fall and then there is a bit of a lag in terms of seeing price drops, or people maybe don't notice that it's, just absorbed?
It's more that we just very rarely see price drops happen at all. The usual way the economy works is that prices rise by a little bit each year, and so do your wages. And usually wages keep up with prices, so everyone's broadly happy. Obviously, that hasn't happened for the past year. So I think the best we can hope for is that prices come down as soon as possible. And then over the next few years, we see some rebound wage growth as wages catch back up to where prices have got to. But it'll probably take a few years to fully work its way out of the system.
Right. So it's not going to be an overnight fix, is it? You can't give people any assurance that things are going to be easier at the supermarkets, at the shops anytime soon.
No. I think probably, unfortunately, the best we can hope for is that you slowly get used to the high prices and then eventually your pay packet catches up.
I think a lot of people are going to be struggling to get used to those high prices. It's definitely the number one issue for a lot of people around the country. Hey, Zach, thank you for giving us a bit of an update on inflation, where we're at the moment. Appreciate your time. Zach Gross from Monash Uni, thanks for coming on Hack.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Hack.
For better or for worse, we're all living in Oppenheimer's world, so I would really like to dedicate this to the peacemakers everywhere.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's the biggest night in Hollywood. Whether you watch it or not, there's still a lot of hype around the Oscars, a lot of attention. People get around it, often a lot of controversy as well. Has wrapped up for another year. Maybe you don't want to sit through the hours of TV, though. You're not that keen on sitting down tonight and watching the whole thing, but you're still interested in what has happened. Well, let's find out. Wenli Ma is a TV and film critic and the culture editor at The Nightly, and she's with us now. Hey, Wenli, thanks for coming on Hack.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Who was the biggest Oscar winner this year?
Well, I guess there were two winners. Officially, it was Oppenheimer because it won 7 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director for Christopher Nolan. He's very first, actually, which is wild to think because he's one of the best-known directors in the world and loads of Nolan fanboys. And it also won acting awards for Robert Downey Jr. and for Cillian Murphy. But I would say unofficially the biggest winner of the Oscars is Ryan Gosling.
What happened there?
Well, he performed I'm Just Ken on stage, and it was an elaborately choreographed, huge spectacle. It referenced, you know, Marilyn Monroe and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And he had his fellow Kens on stage, including Simu Liu and Kingsley Benadir, Shudi Gatwa. He had Slash from Guns N' Roses appear. And I imagine everyone watching at home was sort of squealing and screaming as well, because I think it might be my favourite Oscars moment of all time now.
Oh, wow. That's a huge call, Wenli. I mean, I saw a bit of it out of the corner of my eye on some of the news coverage. I was thinking, whatever's going on right now is huge.
Exactly. And it wasn't a sure thing because, you know, he'd sung a song in La La Land that was previously nominated and he didn't perform that year. So for months now, everyone's been like, is Ryan Gosling going to sing at the Oscars? And when it was finally confirmed a couple of weeks ago, big celebrations. We were all very excited and he lived up to expectations.
Hey, just on Barbie, what ended up happening there? Because there was a lot of hype, but only one win at the Oscars, right?
Yeah, it only won one award for best song, Billie Eilish, and it was nominated for 8. So it did go in with quite a few nominations. So that's a lot of acknowledgement for a movie that is, you know, very bright and pink. It's a comedy. It is kind of a big ad for Mattel. So I think it had all these hurdles to go over anyway. And yes, they ended up opting for Oppenheimer, which is a more traditional, more masculine, you know, movie about war and historical figures and big important things and existentialism. Actually, arguably, I would say Barbie's also about existentialism, but it comes at it in a very different way. But the thing with Barbie is, like, it was the biggest movie of the year last year, culturally, at the box office. It has $1.4 billion in the bank, so Barbie did not lose out in the long run.
Any Australian wins that we should know about, Wenli?
None in the end. We had 4 nominees going in, including Margot Robbie for producing Barbie, Tony McNamara, who was a screenwriter on Poor Things, very, very clever, witty man. And there were a couple of nominees as well in the live action shorts. So nobody won in Australia, but, you know, it's an honour to be nominated. That's what people say. I wouldn't know. I don't think I've actually ever been nominated for anything. I imagine it would be an honour.
Yeah, I hear it's good if you're nominated for something. But, hey, I also saw that Margot Robbie was the second highest paid actor in Hollywood last year, something like that, which doesn't surprise me either. So she's a winner in some sense, we can say.
She's a winner in a sense that, you know, you can literally take it to the bank.
Yeah, so. For sure. Now, the Oscars are sometimes used for, like, kind of political messages, statements, things like that. Was there anything along those lines at this year's event?
Yeah, there were actually a couple of moments. One was the director of the Best Documentary Feature winner, which was 20 Days in Mariupol. And, you know, he got up there and he said, I'm probably the only filmmaker who's going to come up on stage and say, I wish I'd never made this movie, because the fact that the movie exists is because Russia invaded Ukraine, occupied their cities, killed tens of thousands of his fellow Ukrainians. So that was a really strong moment. There was another speech by Jonathan Glazer, who is the British filmmaker that made the German language, The Zone of Interest, a movie that is set in World War II, is adjacent to Auschwitz. So it's very much talking about the Holocaust. And he kind of got up there and talked about the Gaza conflict. And Glazer is a Jewish man as well. So that's probably one of the few instances in an awards season that's been fairly light on political commentary. And then on the other side of the scales is Donald Trump, posted on social media during the Oscar ceremony, kind of sledging the ceremony, sledging the movies, sledging Jimmy Kimmel. And Jimmy Kimmel answered back live on air saying, thank you for watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
Oh, crazy. Shots fired there. I mean, the other thing that I know that you've been talking about is Wes Anderson finally won his first Oscar, but he wasn't actually at the ceremony. And the reason could be a bit interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Wes Anderson has previously been nominated for 7 Oscars. I can't believe he's never won. But he wasn't there because Wes Anderson has a phobia of flying. And he, despite being Texan born, actually lives in Paris and is based out of Europe most of the time. It's where he makes all of his movies. So he famously doesn't fly. I looked it up. For Wes Anderson to leave Paris to go to LA will take 10 days. It's a 7-day crossing, and apparently this is how he goes back and forth between the US and Europe when he needs to, and then another 3 days on a train from New York City to Los Angeles. So that is a 20-day round trip. The man is busy.
That is just such an intense schedule. But hey, if it works for him, if you can afford it, why not? Wenli Ma, film and TV critic, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you.
Hack on Triple J.
Hearing from the Hack audience on shrinkflation, a lot of thoughts here. Someone says, a chocolate bar, half the size, same price. My favourite cereal, 250 grams less, same price. And Charlie says, I've noticed a certain Bicky has reduced the amount of filling and started selling different packets labelled double filling, which just have the old original amount of filling that costs more than the regular packets. So a lot of examples there. You're noticing it, you're convinced it's happening. We'll have more on it as the research keeps coming. That is all we've got time for on the Hack Podcast for now. I'll catch you next time. See ya. Hack.